Welcome to the Lorehounds podcast. We're the Lorehounds, your guides to psycho history. I'm John.
And I'm Marilyn. This is our coverage of Foundation on Apple TV Plus, Season 3, Episode 9, The Paths That Choose Us. If you want to get in contact with us, please send us an email to empire@thelorehounds.com or head over to our Discord server from the link tree in the show notes to meet some wonderful people and have some cool discussion.
And if you like what you've heard and you want to support us or get ad-free and bonus content, check that same link tree for our Patreon and Supercast subscription options. Also, if you want to support us without spending any money, you can just leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. 5-star preferably, but you know, you do you.
Yeah.
And it really does help us in the charts for some reason. I don't know why that is such a key metric for Apple, but it appears to be.
Algorithm.
Well, we don't have time for SEO tonight, Marilyn. We've got a lot of gruesome undertakings to talk about tonight.
What? I wonder what their budget is for fake blood. I mean, because they're not sparing it. Let's just put it that way.
I feel like it's a pretty budget friendly item these days. Fake blood compared to the Death Star. I think that's low on their list of worries for David Goyer.
Or compared to diaphanous clouds of colorful satin for a certain character we'll be talking about later on.
Right. Well, what'd you think overall?
I'm loving it. I am loving it. I don't know how they're going to land this plane, but I hope they do well, because they've certainly been giving us some wonderful, wonderful TV. I still call it TV. Well, I don't know what you want to call it. But anyway, no, I like the way they're visually representing a number of actions that I've only ever read about before. And of course, you could do that in so many different ways, but I like what they've picked. And of course, one or two are more successful than others, but you know, that's to be expected. They're definitely ratcheting up the tensions in several plot lines, but they're still leaving enough mysteries for book readers. So, you know, we're all very much involved with it all. And you know, all the viewers also don't know what's happening yet. If they haven't read the books.
Yeah, I have seen some wild theories about
I'll bet you have.
I'm like, you are probably very wrong. But, you know, there is a chance that all the book readers are being led in one direction.
That's
not true.
No.
I haven't watched the finale yet. I don't think you have either.
Last time I checked, it hasn't even gone live yet. So
we do have it now.
Oh, we do have it now? Okay. Yeah, I didn't look today. So,
but I have not watched it. So I think it's very possible that I've been duped and all of our spoiler corner talk has been for naught.
Oh, sure. No, if that happens, I will not, you know, I don't know. I don't have any skin in the game particularly, but I'm fully aware that they could be leading us book readers down the garden path with all of this.
Yeah.
But I think that's part of the fun. So.
Right. It's not knowing, because this show has taken such a turn from the books in a lot of ways. And I like that, because it's its own story. It's telling a modern story using the same sort of chess pieces as Asimov used.
Right. More or less.
Some new ones, yeah.
They're running a few chess pieces to some degree he might not have appreciated, but that's okay, because, you know, this is not his version of the story. So.
Well, we've actually brought Isaac Asimov onto the show to give his thoughts.
And which medium are you using for the seance, John?
I'm from New York, so the Long Island medium has got to be it. You know, she's Teresa. She's the only one for us.
Okay. I trust you on that.
Are you aware of this? This is like a reality show.
No, never heard of it.
Oh, yeah. This was like a whole big thing. She was the Long Island medium, and she had her own reality show.
Okay.
Okay. Right. Well, anyway, those of you who know will know.
Of course.
I, too, was very impressed by this episode. I think that we are going down interesting paths. I didn't honestly think that that's what Dusk was going to do with his big boy weapon. I think that they caught the mule by surprise in a lot of ways, which was a welcome twist to the mule, right? We needed some resistance to push back on that plot line a little bit. He was winning a little too easily.
Well, and also we need to see him nonplussed and on the back foot.
Right.
You know, he is not completely invulnerable to anything.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think everybody was astounded and horrified.
Yeah. Certainly Quint.
Oh, yes. That was
I mean, overall, I'd say even the plot lines that I was less of a fan of last episode, like the X-Men plot line, I'm still going to call them the X-Men every now and then. But, you know, Gale and friends going, like, I didn't really love, like, the tactical team of the second Foundation just landing on Terminus. I was like, all right, that feels a little silly. But I do like the way that they're handling that, too. And I love the way that she, first of all, her and Harry together are always a delight to watch.
Exactly.
And the way that they do that exposition was really, really smart. And honestly, improved the last season finale for me. Right. Because I think one of my questions was, how the heck did you get that many people on the vault?
Yes. At once.
It's and a planet.
Don't ask me to explain the physics of it, but at least we get an explanation.
Right. Oh, look, it's magic disguised as math for the show. Totally fine. That's exactly what Foundation is about.
Absolutely. Yeah. You call them the X-Men. I call them the Dirty Dozen minus seven.
All right. Fair enough. Well, why don't we get right into it? We've got plenty to talk about. I thought this was going to be a hard one to outline, but in the end, I got it down to the same amount of scenes as I got last time.
Oh, I took care of that with all my notes.
Don't worry. We're going to get through it. We're going to hold your hand all the way to the end, folks.
No, I don't need my hand held. You might feel like you want to pull me back once or twice.
Oh, no. I'm saying we're collectively holding the listener's hand through the episode.
Okay. All right, listener.
But if you're driving, you should have two hands on the wheel.
Please.
All right. The second Foundation is on the hunt. Gale baits the mule's forces into following her into the forest. She captures Warden Fallon Greer and takes a look into her mind. As Gale interrogates Greer's subconscious, a projection of the mule pulls Greer under the water of her subconsciousness, drowning her in both dream and reality. Pritchard arrives and brings them to a group of refugees. Gale checks them each for conversion, and finds that Magnifico is under the mule's influence. They tie him up and head to the vault.
Yes, well, we learned one interesting little factoid when the downed warden is gloating over the fact that they knew that Gale had arrived. Gale said, yeah, I wanted you to.
Yeah, I like that. I like that. You know, just landing right by the vault. That seemed very silly to me last episode.
Yeah.
But if they were trying to bait someone, I think that was, you know, that makes sense.
It was the perfect thing to do. Yep. And this is one of the visual realizations that I really loved of when Gale is reading, quote unquote, reading minds, this beautiful room, there's wood, there's stone, there's candlelight. I mean, it's what a lovely way to visually represent someone poking around in somebody else's subconscious. And, you know, it gets very dramatic with, you know, the drowning and all the rest of it. But I just thought that was really nice. I enjoyed that a lot.
I thought that was actually supposed to be Synax. That was supposed to be like a play on the Synax temple.
Oh, she has been referred to as the girl from the water planet, hasn't she?
Yeah. You know what I'm saying? I don't know if we ever actually saw something. I don't know if we actually saw something like that with the Synax temple or something like that. I would have to go back and rewatch season one again.
All I remember is they you know, when she goes back at some point, or maybe it's later on in the development, that their sacred temple is at water level now. And everything is at water. And sometimes they're walking along walkways that are under 2 inches of water or that kind of thing. But
right. And I don't think that this is what anybody sees when going into a subconscious. I think this is Gale.
I do too.
Makes sense of someone's subconscious.
And now that you think
that sounds
of
like psychohistory.
I think it's subconscious. Now that I think of it, John, you're right. That building, quote unquote, reminded me of a lot of the interiors of the buildings on Synax. So
yeah,
it makes sense. I mean, if you will, these are the things that built her sense of self and her subconscious. Right. So
because yeah, that's nice what call. Her subconscious should look like, right? This was her place to find peace and meditate and pray and whatever else she needed to do. Mm-hmm. So I think that would make sense that that's her base to start poking around somebody in.
And study Callie's ninth proof of folding in by candlelight.
Yeah.
Yeah, what we learn is the warden actually chose to die rather than to grab the lifeline that Gale was showing her and to throw off the influence of the... She says so. Or Pritch says so when he gets there.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it was not it was her choice to actually say, yeah, no, I don't want you to free me. I've never known such love. That's it. It was so lovely to see Salvor's coin again. I know you probably rolled your eyes when it happened, but I didn't mind.
I think that was one of the less cringy points of Salvor's plotline.
It was the connection, the mother-daughter connection, and you know, calling heads, calling cats. And I have to think it was pretty painful for Gale to see this current day warden in the light of what she knows about the position and how it was originally designed, and of course the fact that her daughter enacted it for so long and became rightly very famous as the warden, and now, you know, it's seeming to be something rather different. Now I have a question for you. When Pritch shows up, he warns them to saying, don't unvoice here.
Mm-hmm.
Does that mean don't communicate without speaking? I.e. don't communicate from mind to mind? Or does it mean don't speak out loud? That's what I thought.
Yeah,
but I just
no,
wanted
he,
to make
he
sure.
meant don't do the psychic stuff because that's more easily detectable. By
because
the
Mule has got all the psychic channels on. Yeah. Yep. No, I figured that's what it was. But
They established this term last season and they just haven't used it. So
they did. They did. But somehow in the context, I thought, no, wait, I think he means this, but does he? And of course, Gale checks him to make sure that he hasn't been turned. And
right. Happily, and I like that he goes, no, of course you didn't do that. That's fine.
Exactly.
And he completely understands and submits immediately without feeling betrayed or anything like that.
Right. No, he's very sensible. Very sensible that way. And it was Pritch who tells her, the warden prevented herself from letting go of the musicians over her. And he says, love. That's what it was. Everyone who's been converted says it's love. Which is kind of ghastly.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really, yeah, really something. Finally, we see Maggie again. And you know, two whole episodes without Maggie. And then there he is along with Ebling Miss and Torin. I love Ebling Miss's line when he introduces, this is Gale Dornick. And Torin says, who's Gale Dornick? He says, she's a real celebrity.
Yeah, that was pretty good. Torin's like, what the fuck? Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Him and Beta, though, they both are like, oh, you may have seen our performance. You know, it's they definitely have some egos going on there.
Well, if you're going to be an influencer, I think you almost have to have.
That's
ego,
true.
Don't you?
That's true.
I mean, it's kind of a first prerequisite. And it's interesting. She tells the people that she reads she's not rooting around in the attic of their subconscious or the basement, if you prefer. She just looks to see who they love most.
Yeah.
And if it's anybody other than the Mule, then they're fine. If it is the Mule, well, then maybe you tie them up or something. I wonder if it was wise of her to tell them that Pritch is, that she loves Pritch.
Yeah, I mean, she doesn't know.
Who Pritch loves the most.
She doesn't know a lot of these people, right? Like, who knows? Well, I guess she knows that nobody's been secretly converted except for Magnifico.
Right. So, but even so, you know, the fewer bits of information you let drop, the better in a situation like this, I think.
Yeah, I mean, this was silly because she has specifically called this out as a weak point, right? She has specifically called this out as a vulnerability
exactly.
in the organization. Why would you go and broadcast that? Why couldn't she just be like, for example, Pritchard here loves his girlfriend, you know?
Yeah.
Loves his partner.
Yeah.
Great. You know what? Done.
Yeah. And I found it interesting when she, well, first of all, I'm screaming, you know, you haven't read Maggie yet, as she's, you know, joyfully spilling all this information. And so it takes one of the members of her team to point out that she hasn't done this. I'm like, oops, maybe, possibly. And when she begins to do so, the Mule appears in the vision and wraps his arms around Maggie from behind. Now, to me, he looked frightened. He looked scared. And
really?
And very possessive. He looked like a small child whose toy might be taken away from him.
I didn't get that, but I think that's really interesting.
Yeah, well, that's how I read it. I mean, it he wasn't angry. He wasn't, you know, oh, you silly girl, what do you think you're trying to do? To me, he really looked frightened.
And now,
don't take my blanket.
Yeah, something else that I thought was really interesting about this is it appeared different than all the other subconsciouses, right?
Didn't it?
I didn't notice any water kind of imagery. This was basically just him in the chair that he was in.
Yeah, yeah.
And
yeah.
I wonder what that means.
Mm, yeah,
that this good appeared question. Different. And we know that Magnifico would have been an earlier conversion of the mule, right?
Well, what he says, what Magnifico says is, the mule saved me a long time ago.
Right.
You get close and then love gets in, which seems to be the modus operandi generally. But then, interestingly, he adds, I love Beta. I'm loyal as an ink stain. I love that line.
Mm-hmm. That's pretty good.
And so what is Magnifico trying to say here?
He's like, no, trust me. I won't betray you guys. I can serve both of my masters, I think he's trying to say.
Yeah, if that's what he believes, then I think he's being terribly naive.
Yeah, I think so too.
But they're presenting him to us as a very naive character, so, you know, that right. fits. That fits. And of course, the minute she tells him what she's seeing, all the phasers or whatever they call them get whipped out, and she says, no, it's all right. I've read his mind. If he tries to betray us, I'll know. Which is interesting, because it's not like an in and out, apparently.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, she leave a little communicator behind, so that anytime something significant changes, it's like, boop, 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 uh-oh, here
right,
it is.
Right. And she seems to touch people every time she goes in, unlike the mule, who seems to be able to do this without it.
I wondered about that, too.
I don't know if this is like a limitation of hers, but I don't think so, because at other times she tells somebody to sleep when she's not touching them, and it's fine.
Yes, yes.
So I don't know, maybe like getting into the subconscious is something more intimate.
I think that's
that she needs to find a physical intimacy with too.
Yeah, that's what I was just going to say, is that it seems that the sleep command can be done.
Yeah,
you know, as long as she has enough focus or whatever. But
right,
that careful reading and entering down through layers or whatever.
When she's being a melatonin alec,
if you say
she doesn't need to touch anybody, right?
I guess.
All right, I'll stop now.
And I love the way she says, I'm going to go to the one mind on New Terminus who can't be converted.
Yep.
And yes, that's true. But even if he wasn't a holograph, I think he still couldn't convert Vault Ares Minor. Or
I think you could. I don't think that there's a limit to it.
Maybe. I'm just reflecting on the stubbornness of our Harry.
He is very stubborn.
Mm-hmm.
He is very stubborn.
And Ebling points this out. Ebling says, you know, Vault Harry isn't listening to anyone. And Gale says, they'll listen to me.
Right.
Which I like.
Of course, if she manipulates him with a false promise.
Well, whatever. Whatever. Again, this is the only drawback to this kind of story, where the altering of minds is a possibility. And even though Gale has made it clear that she can tell when minds have been altered, once she's entered them, if they get changed, but she still has to go in a little ways before she can actually determine the initial position, as it were. You still have that question of, well, you know, are they faking it? Have they been converted and they're hiding it? You know, that just, it leaves some things open to question in my mind. But Gale tells Pritch, and maybe the audience too, who might have forgotten, that her daughter, Selvar, could cross the null field and enter in, because she had Gale's genes in her. And so she says, this was always my dream to make, so I'm the one who can enter.
And yeah, I don't fully understand, honestly, why that would have been the case. Like, why would Gale's genes have been promoted to bypass the null field when she was supposed to live as a normal person on Terminus?
Well, I think once Harry realized that the plans were going to change, and that Gale was going to have to take Raish's place.
Mm.
Part of the setting up of the vault included the null field, but, you know, whenever it was going to happen, you know, Gale's genetic code, if you will, was the card key that unlocked the vault or whatever.
Okay, so Vault Harry still had his primary idea, and so he was still into the PR network, and he knew that Gale had taken over.
Something like that.
I buy it.
And I like that Vault Harry receives her by saying, it's good to see you again, because, you know, that's nice. And maybe he even feels that way. Who knows? No, I'm sure.
Yeah.
I'm sure he's being true here.
I've only watched the first episode of Alien Earth at this point, and I know that's a shame because I've heard it's very good so far. But in that first episode, there was a whole bit where there's you know, mild spoilers for the first episode, but there's a synthetic human, basically, and somebody who was a human is now in a robot body forever. And she says, like, why don't I feel like anger like that anymore, like visceral anger? And and he's like, it's hormones. You don't have the hormones anymore, right?
You, like, don't have the glands.
You don't have the chemicals. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And I thought that was really interesting. So I wonder how much this Harry can feel that.
Okay. Connection to Sir Terry Pratchett. In one of the many instances where a character dies and death is present. And the ghost of the character rises up and says, why don't I feel angry? And death says, gonads.
Yeah.
You've lost all of those things that create emotion.
Right. Oh, man. That series is so good.
It really is.
All right. Well, why don't we move on to Dusk making his play?
Let us do that.
Demerzel gathers a trio of traitors to the audience chamber. A projection of Dusk appears, and they get on a teleconference with the mule. Dusk sarcastically relays the treasonous offer, but then rejects it, unveiling the Navacula. With it, he destroys Clarion Station, the Cloud Dominion, and the Maiden. The mule considers what to do next, and Dawn taunts him. So that was a lot, huh?
Yeah. I mean, before the whole meeting starts, he tells Dawn that Tranter is about to be given over to him. So I want to know, how did he know? Had they already been in touch with him, the three other entities, to tell him that this is what we're going to do and we're going to try and convince Cleon? But
I thought he was just smart enough to be like, they're going to think that they can give me a gift and make me go away. So let's take the gift.
Okay, because he was very specific.
Yeah. You know? No, but I mean,
he's torturing
the home world. Well, that is the home world. So I think that would be his thought to go to. Right?
So you don't think he's monitoring them from a distance, or that one of them got in contact with him?
I just don't think it changes it that much whether he is or not.
I'm just wondering if the Galactic Council people might have gotten in touch with him and said, look, here's what we're planning. We're going to have to bring the Empire over. And let's see what happens. But maybe not.
Right.
Yeah. Dusk makes his really dramatic appearance after Demerzel had already entered the throne room. And then when they say, well, you know, we can't do anything without Empire, she says, I am Empire. And it made me wonder how many times in this series has she said this before? It feels as though she's saying this more and more these days.
Mm-hmm.
Which, again, I find interesting. Quint, of course, says she has a bad feeling about this because, you know, she, as a Foundationer, has a sense of the broad sweep of history. She's already had some experience with what the mule is like. But also, she's gotten to know her Dusk a little bit, too. She says, you mustn't back Empire into a corner like this.
Mm-hmm.
Hello. And I wonder if this is an example of Foundation wisdom. You know, she's studied the cases. She's done her own work over the years.
Right.
You don't push anybody into a corner, because if you do, they're going to come out swinging because they have no other option, because they've got nothing left to lose.
Right. Well, I also think that she is coming from a place that was just destroyed, and she knows what it's like to be from a big dog planet that is now desperate. Dust. And she feels that same thing, right? The desperation. She's like, if he has anything up his sleeve, he's going to use it.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And he does, right? I mean, he destroys the populations of billions of people on three different planets.
Yeah.
I guess the Cloud Dominion, did I understand he it was like multiple planets he targeted, kind of?
I think it is. I think it's a cluster system or something like that.
Yeah, something like that. So who knows how the Death Star works. I'm going to call it the Death Star because that's just what it is.
You go right ahead. Yeah, his entrance was very dramatic, you know, oversized, life-size, over the middle of the middle throne. You say, okay, I am Empire, as about as visually as you can. And I love his calling the convener a treasonous fish-bellied shit. Come on, Dust, tell us what you really think.
Oh, boy.
And he takes it all over and announces Trantor is staying where it belongs, with me. In my last hours, I will not bow down to a usurper named after a farm animal.
Lovely.
Lovely. Really, he gets some of the best lines. It's a little touch of the Wrath of Khans here.
He's really, this was the performance of the show for me this season.
Yeah.
Was Dusk's monologue here.
He really did an extraordinary, I mean, ghastly and extraordinary thing, but he was definitely enough over the top to be very satisfying without actually being corny, at least in my mind.
Mm-hmm.
And despite Quint's pleas, he just boom, boom, boom. And it's interesting because Varelis is still holding in her hand the salt crystal bracelet that she had gotten from Demerzel when Demerzel took it off. And she just clutches it in her hand and sobs, and, you know, the convener sags against the wall, Cloud and Joiner collapses, weeping into a swirl of colorful silk. All of this made me wonder if the original Star Wars didn't have a better idea when they did not show Leia's reaction after Alderaan was destroyed.
Hmm.
You know, they showed her horrified anticipation before it actually happened. I mean, it's a little touch of the Alfred Hitchcocks here. You know, you don't actually show the thing. You just, you know, you let the suspense build and build and build and let people supply it in their own mind. But I don't know. It just made me wonder. I mean, obviously, they were each of them crushed in their own ways. But it's still, I don't know. And I'm beginning to realize the profound impact that our visual media culture and AI combined have had on us generally when it comes to generated visual images. Because my first thought was, well, how do they know this is real? How do they know it's just not a bunch of projections? And I don't know if that's the result of the burgeoning 21st century cynicism about media representation, or
it could be. I mean, by then, you know, I'm sure you could make any kind of artificial, you know, display that for somebody, but I think they know. I think they know that they overplayed their hand here.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, obviously, and for the sake of the story, one has to keep receiving it. And I thought of you with Dusk's final line, you'll take the warning, don't F with Empire. And so
yeah,
I had to look up the etymology just to let you know it was first attested in Middle English in 1475, so we can't really call it a modern term, right?
But I just am not a big fan of
I'm not either.
Sci-fi.
Well, I'm not a fan of it in anywhere except when I'm by myself and I need to swear.
Well, we're rated explicit on this podcast, so
I know.
I could say it right now if I want to, but I won't.
Go right ahead.
But I won't.
I think what's changed is the casual contemporary usage of it.
Yeah, I think that's right. And as a sentence enhancer, right?
Right. Well, I mean, it's like very unique. I mean, which is absolutely a false dichotomy, because if you are unique, that is it. You cannot be more unique than something else. If you see what
let's,
I mean.
Let's get George Carlin in here. All right.
Seven words you can't say on TV. But it becomes jarring in the extraterrestrial drama and fantasy world, I think, because it's become so common here. And frankly, I think it pulls a lot of the power out from using the word.
Well, yeah. I mean, I remember reading, there was an article about how in Andor, at the end of season one, spoilers with the end of season one of Andor, when Marva said, fight the Empire.
Yeah.
She originally was going to say, fuck the Empire.
Ah.
And they changed it because they said it just didn't feel right. And I'm with them. I think it's more powerful saying, fight the Empire.
I agree.
And so I do think that it does detract from what they're saying here. Now, I kind of rolled my eyes when he said, don't fuck with Empire. But other than that, I thought this was a brilliant monologue, and I did enjoy it very much.
I think the actor had a good time.
Yeah, I mean, I think what made it ring wrong to me is that this isn't like something where he's speaking casually to somebody. This is somebody literally going ruler to ruler in what should be basically the most fanciful of and articulate of moments and using very colloquial language. I think that's really what gets me.
Yeah, no, you're right. You're right. The F word to me just doesn't rise to the grandeur of the occasion or the drama or whatever.
Right. If you're going to have war crimes, you best bring your best language.
If you're going to be Shakespearean about it. And I'm sure that Shakespeare used that word somewhere in some of his plays, but it's a jarring note. What can I say?
Well, let's bite our thumbs at thee and move on, huh?
Well, just one more comment. I found myself wondering if Dusk didn't spare New Terminus from destruction in order to spare Quint's feelings, because that would be the logical place to go next. I mean, if he has this power, why not blow it up now? He doesn't know that Dawn is there and alive, but he knows the location of the mule. The mule says it's because he's too far away, so maybe that's, you know, the showrunner's giving us that information so we don't just say, well, why did he just destroy the mule? And, you know, but that's why. Maybe. I don't know. But I don't think Dusk managed to spare Quint's feelings, even if he did spare Terminus.
Oh, no. She's very uncomfortable with war crimes.
She is very upset. Exceedingly upset.
I mean, who could blame her? Don't war crime, Dusk.
I absolutely don't blame her in the slightest.
I just finished reading a book called East West Street. I don't know if you've heard of this one.
No.
It's actually about the origins of the term genocide and crimes against humanity. Really interesting thing. And I think it kind of applies here because there were two lawyers, and the book focuses on them. They're both from Lviv, you know, in Ukraine now, but was in Poland, and it was a whole thing. Anyway, they were these two Jewish lawyers, and they each had a very different view of war crimes. Whereas Lemkin, he was Raphael Lemkin. He was very much of the mind of he created the word genocide, and he said it's the wrong thing. The thing that is so new about this is the particularized targeting of a group of people. And this was, by the way, in anticipation of the Nuremberg trials. That's why he was doing this.
Okay.
He said the wrong thing is the targeting of a group of people based on their common identity. Right.
Yeah.
And Lauterpacht says that is extremely wrong. But I almost don't want to focus on genocide because it makes it sound like you have to have this intent to attack a group for something to be considered so vile. And so he called it crimes against humanity, which would include things like genocide. But he said, you know, we should consider more broadly, like, human beings have basic rights and you can't just be killing them indiscriminately like this, even if you are their sovereign. And I thought that was really interesting. And it kind of applies here because I was thinking to myself as I was watching this, I was like, is this genocide by Dusk? And I think the answer is yes, by that definition. Yeah. I also think that, like, even if it wasn't, it was vile. I mean, it was a crime against humanity.
Crime against humanity. Yeah, sure.
So anyway.
Good to have multiple terms in your vocabulary.
I just think it's fascinating to think about stuff like that. You know, don't you know, kill your own citizens, everybody. If there's any sovereigns listening, don't do that. Please.
would be sovereigns.
Yeah. All right. Well, enough of my rambling about books that I read. Let's go on to a quick break.
Hey everyone, David here. We're almost done with Alien Earth, and I wanted to let you know about something that we've put together. We've created a season pass for our coverage. It's $10, one time, no recurring subscription. You can grab this whenever it works for you. What you get is ad-free access to all Alien Earth episodes, plus the bonus video analysis that I've already done, and several more background conversations and special episodes that I've got in planning. We put a lot of work into the episodes, and when it's all said and done, you're getting more than 10 podcasts for $10, which really is a pretty good value considering the amount of time and production work that we put into all the episodes. And look, we're an independent podcast, and having direct listener support like this means that we get to keep doing this kind of deep dive coverage that we all enjoy. It's pretty simple. So only if this works for you and your circumstances, no pressure at all. But if you've been enjoying Alien Earth coverage and want to support what we're doing while getting some extra content, the season pass is there for you. You can find the link in our show notes or head to lorehoundsnetwork.supercast.com. Thanks for listening and thanks for being part of this really great community.
All right, we're back for some reflections. Mm-hmm. Dusk and Demerzel meet in the Hall of Cleonic Legacy. That's what I'm naming it. I don't remember if they named another thing.
There is a name for it, but I can't.
Oh, they went there to discuss his title change from the Conciliator to the Consequential. He tells her to blame him for all the death, and she reminds him of his upcoming death. Dusk invites her to clear her chest, and she confesses that her mind is turned into a maze. She cannot determine her next step.
Yeah.
Later, Dusk tries to bribe the horrified Quint with lamb brains, but she determinedly makes him feel small for his horrific actions and mourns the loss of hope. Dusk then has trouble enjoying his brains.
I've forgotten the brains part. I just watched him slice it in the flank and said, I don't need to see any more of this.
I mean, they did really zero in on it, right? They really were like, for sure.
Well, and of course, all the symbolism, you know, he's about to be sacrificed and the sacrificial lamb and so on and so on and so on.
Right.
Which was all interesting. Yes, he enjoyed that stroll along the memorial plinths of previous empire, dissing each one of his ancestors.
And then
interesting that he almost seems to want to comfort Demerzel. He insists that the blame and responsibility belong to him. Maybe he didn't want to share the glory either, as he saw it.
Well, I think he just wanted to be known for something, right? And the conciliator. I think, you know, that's a wonderful thing to be, but he didn't think so. He's like, what does that even mean? He's like, what did I even do if I just conciliated, right?
Unfortunately, you know, people who negotiate for peace don't get the big headlines the way people do.
I know. Then you got to have these people writing the book that I read and saying, hey, you know, maybe we should look at these things and be a little more careful next time. Yeah. Anyway.
But Demerzel interprets this as a hope that maybe he doesn't have to, you know, go through it. She tells him, you still have to ascend tomorrow.
Yeah.
And Dust says, oh, this wasn't a plea for my life. It was just an attempt at kindness. Do you believe him?
I mean, it does kind of remind me of when my children don't want to go to bed and they start telling me, oh, you know, let's go play this game or that game. And I'm like, yeah, you know, you still have to go to bed in 10 minutes. And, you know, that's they kind of have the same vibe.
But Dusk and I have one thing in common. We both think it's ironic that each of these people have exactly the same faces, but they have different numbers and different honorifics. You know, they have to be named, even though they're all supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
Just a continuation of one-time human that had not been cloned, that had a belly button. So that it is interesting. And Demerzel is of two minds. We may have saved or doomed Empire. So she's not at all clear. And then, yeah, the first time and probably in this Dusk's life that he's heard Demerzel be anything less than clear, asks her to unburden herself, you know, in the place of her former counselor, Varela, saying, whatever you say to me dies with me tomorrow, which is, I suppose, if it happens, certainly true. But I don't think any counselor wants to have that kind of, you know,
right,
insurance that they will not talk about whatever it is they're going to tell them. And I love, again, gosh, their language, their imagery, the way they do this. She says, my mind was once unicursal, meaning it had a single path that was easy to follow. Like what a maze actually is. As long as you follow the maze, or a labyrinth, rather. A labyrinth has one path, and if you keep walking in the same direction, do go to the center. A maze is designed to confuse you. So she says, my mind was once unicursal, and I'll add my own parenthesis, like a labyrinth. It is now a maze with many choices. I may have to evaluate all paths. It causes me much distress. So maybe she's reached the maximum capability of her positronic brain to suss out all the options.
Well, I just read this as Harry's paradox bomb work.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. I thought that too. And we do get some further clarification about that later on.
Right.
Yeah, and then when Quent seeks out Dusk, he's thinks he's prepared this wonderful last supper for him with all this magnificent food and, you know, a loving partner at his side. And of course, she lets him have it with both barrels.
You know, what did he think was going to happen? You know, he felt the need to hide his killing of the ferret or whatever it was.
Mm-hmm.
And yet
that was such a brutal, vicious act with absolutely no.
Absolutely. And but so he
need.
But he knew he had to hide it, right? Like he knew that yes. she would frown upon it. And yeah. so he's going to hide that from her, but then proudly display his, you know, genocidal war crime, whatnot. To her and act like nothing bad is going to happen?
Yeah. Yeah. His opening line is, oh, you're upset. Boy, does that set her off.
Yeah.
You think? what were you thinking? I don't know. But her point is, this was just revenge. It wasn't a strategic move, et cetera, et cetera. And Dusk tries to defend his decision by saying, well, Demerzel agreed for it, so it must have been justifiable. And Quent says, that's your math. It's not the math I believe in.
Mm.
And he shoots right back with, is it your math or Selden's plan? And of course, you know, the two are pretty much the same, and what's wrong with that? But Quent says, I believe there's a way to save humanity, and it isn't this way. I'm telling you what I need. I need a way forward, but foundation has fallen and you have shit all over. So where do I go for help? Do you see what you've taken from me? Dust says, well, did I take hope? You know, the mule already took hope away. And her final line, I call you a small, petty man screaming and pissing with fear as they load you on the tunnel. I mean, woohoo!
She's not wrong. She's not wrong.
She's not wrong. Of course, Dust shouts after, I am at peace. And I'm like, yeah, brother, sure you are. Yeah, I believe that. And then he can't eat his lovely lamb later on. So I don't think so.
Very interesting, too. I know the brain was almost like a gag, but at the same time, he had just gotten done seeing the statue heads of his former self. Former versions of himself. Wonder how much he's like, I am the sacrificial lamb, and everything I'm thinking and saying right now is going to be on a platter tomorrow.
Yeah, no, I'm sure he is. I'm sure he is, that he's being sacrificed to the wishes of the first Cleon.
Yeah.
Instead of being allowed to live out a lifespan, whatever that might or might not be.
Right.
And this actually does come back to this question of, would you really want to know the day you're going to die? And the more you see of this Cleon, the more you think maybe it's not such a great idea after all.
We'll have to just take a poll of the dead people.
With the Long Island Medium.
With the Long Island Medium. Teresa's going to be busy.
I guess so. I guess so.
I hope somebody out there gets this reference and is going to.
Well, folks, anybody who gets the reference, please write to empire@thelorehounds.com.
Yes, indeed.
I know somebody else who's busy. That would be Kale.
Kale, yes, she is. And we have a lot to talk about there.
Oh, yeah.
Demerzel enters the Radiant to meet with Kale, or whatever Kale is. Interfacing with another artificial intelligence allows Demerzel to deal with the paradox of her current path. Kale suggests a deferred betrayal by inviting the Second Foundation to shelter in the Trantor Library without deciding whether to betray them.
Yeah, isn't that interesting? I mean, there is the knowledge that not to choose is still to choose.
This reminds me so much of Aes Sedai Oaths.
Ah,
you
yes,
know,
indeed.
You speak no untrue word. If you're uncertain, can you? I don't remember. I think you can then say whatever you think. I know that whatever you believe to be true is what you can say. So if you sincerely believe an untrue thing is true, you can say that. So I think this is almost similar here, right? Like if you believe that this may or may not be serving Empire, then you can do it.
Well, which is in effect what she says at the end, isn't
it? Right.
But the whole concept of Demerzel being able to go to the library, get Kali's proof of folding, place her Prime Radiant on it, and enter into the Radiant. I mean, we saw Harry enter into the Radiant earlier, but we didn't understand, and he didn't understand that that's what was going on. And I love how she's musing, "My memories helped to build this place. A second mother built the walls. There may be a third." And so I'm wondering, where is Kali the second? Is she Kali, is the third unknown?
I think Kali is the third and Harry's the second.
So Harry,
I know it's a mother, but I think that's what she is saying there.
Okay. I just wondered if it might be Gale.
I mean, I might be wrong. I don't think Gale had anything to do with making the Radiant, though.
Using it now, if they're making any additions or further clarifications or whatever.
I don't know.
Maybe that's more of a book thing.
Yeah, I do think that is more of a book thing. That's something that sort of comes up a little bit in the books.
Sure.
I don't want to spoil that.
The second mother could have been Harry's wife.
Oh, true. Yuna, right?
Yeah, because she very clearly had a lot to... And didn't she actually present him with the original model as a birthday present?
Oh, I think you're right. We just glossed over this whole thing, didn't we?
Memory comes in for the win.
Our inboxes are saved, Marilyn. Yay! Thank you.
"I seek answers and you may have them, Kale." And Kale, without even being asked, understands that Demerzel is wondering if Kale is a robot. And she responds, "I know who you want me to be. Like seeks for like. Robots were not made to be alone. I am surprised you can still function." And in light of what we've already seen and heard in the previous episodes, I find that incredibly poignant.
Yeah.
I also find it interesting that at the same time that Gale is consulting with Valtteri, who is very much a product of the Prime Radiant, Demerzel is consulting with Kale, who, whatever she is and however she is, but definitely, tightly connected with the Prime Radiant. So truth time, Demerzel tells Kale that she lied to Gale. She does believe that Gale saw the future that she described, which is interesting. And then we hear Demerzel's story about 5,000 years ago when the library was many levels down, because Trantor was many levels further down. And the last surviving robots tried to hide in the library and only left gouges in the stone floor as they were dragged out. I mean, how do they come up with such evocative language? It's just, I was absolutely there, just there.
Yeah.
And this is where she says, she's been thinking about helping Second Foundation hide in the library, but realizes that this is a paradox from which she cannot find an exit. She wants to help the Second Foundation, but are they enemies of Empire? And so is she even being sincere in if she makes that offer? And this is where we see Harry gave the Prime Radiant to Demerzel as a paradox bomb.
Right.
So I was right that he wasn't trying to help her when he initially gave it to her.
Well, that might not be true, though, right? It might be that he was trying to help her free herself from her bonds.
Hmm. Okay.
You never know. I mean, things can serve multiple purposes, right? If you don't know your intent,
well,
you can make a choice later, right?
Hey. Yeah, no, exactly. But at the same time, if he had, in his calculations, foreseen that Empire might grow too strong with, a quote-unquote healthy positronic brain at the center with all this history. Because, of course, since she helped him with the Prime Radiant in the beginning, he got to know her a fair bit and who and what she was. Maybe this was his contribution towards ensuring that Empire would fall at some point in a way that bring Foundation out on top. So, I don't know. And Demerzel says, "Indeed, I believe that in that future, I will have offered, as it is future, that ancient place to the Second Foundation for survival. And I like this. This gets back to what you were saying earlier when Kali says, if in your vision you couldn't discern intent, then both options are still open for you.
Mm-hmm.
You can decide later. See how it helps to have someone to think with? This is how it should be. And again, we get back to this theme of robots were not built to be alone.
Yeah.
And by extension, humans were not built to be alone. We need other people to bounce ideas off of.
I don't know. Have you seen Castaway?
I have not.
Really? Oh, really? I was just joking about asking that. I mean, that was one of the main plot points is he needed somebody to talk to. So he made the ball into a head and he named it Wilson and he kept talking to it.
Okay. Well,
yep.
There you go.
You need to talk to somebody.
Well, thinking out loud. And also, I finally decided to do a little digging. This whole question, well, who and what is Kali? And of course, I've always recognized the resonance with the Hindu Vedic tradition in which Kali is a major goddess, primarily associated with time, death, and destruction. So the time piece caught my mind right away, Kali being associated with time and death and destruction. And transcendental knowledge, part of a group of goddesses who provide liberating knowledge. Etymologically, the term Kali refers to one who governs time or is black. So I wonder if that contributed at all to their casting, although I think, again, they just based it upon who they thought was the best actor for the job as they understood this character of Kali. And the terrifying iconography of Kali makes her a unique figure among the goddesses and symbolizes her embracement and embodiment of the grim worldly realities of blood, death, and destruction. So it's kind of hard to feel like you can sidle up to this one, but she still is stated to protect and bestow liberation on her devotees who approach her with the attitude of a child towards their mother. And now I'm thinking of Demerzel.
Mm.
Who can produce destruction with a touch of her finger.
She sure can.
But who also sings lullabies to her baby emperors. And, that motherly nature out of this figure, which is also kind of terrifying. So all of that kind of, I mean, I didn't get my answer, who or what is Kali? And I have a feeling they're just not going to tell us.
Yeah, I hope that they do explain it at some point, but.
Or at least explain how they interpret her.
Yeah. I don't know if Kali is certainly not a robot, right? Like we know that it's not a robot. She goes, I know what you want me to be.
Exactly.
But an artificial construct, right? This is an artificial intelligence of some kind. And I think that's what Kali is trying to say to Demerzel, right? We can math together.
Mm. Right. You don't have to have another robot to have these kind of out loud conversations to
right.
come to some new wisdom. You need an intelligence which can handle this kind of dimensional thinking and
right.
paths and universals and all of that and not be completely overwhelmed by
but
it.
But a human is insufficient for her. She does need some kind of
yes.
artificial being.
Yes. And actually, now that you say that, I wonder if maybe her seeking through luminism also was a way of trying to seek something beyond the humans
yeah.
who she knew wouldn't help her or couldn't help her to something right. else that might. And of course, in the end, she kind of pulls the trigger on that whole thing herself, which I had more comments about, but more in the afterward.
Do you think that we're going to get a prequel series where Demerzel is a detective on classic Earth, like in the robot novels? As Danilo.
That would be fun.
I think
that
it would be
fun.
Although at some point she's going to start aging, and then that's not really going to make sense for a robot, is it?
Not so much.
We'll see. I mean, maybe they could always recast and say like, oh, well, her shell was changed, right? Like,
right.
Who knows?
I mean, she
who
goes
knows?
Through all those elaborate repair.
Right.
Mechanisms all the time.
So I mean, the robot novels, the first one takes place in New York City, so I don't know if she'd have that accent either if she was made to fit in New York City.
Yeah, that
I mean, I don't
have
know.
A
New York City
with.
fits a whole lot of people, huh?
I was going to say, New York City can yeah. embrace a yeah. great deal of diversity.
You can have Her that force. Accent in New York City, and that's normal.
Why not? Why not? Yeah. I have another theory about Demerzel related to the books, but I'm saving that for book spoilers.
All right, well, let's take a quick break, and then we'll go back to Mycogen. We're back. Day narrowly escapes being eaten by bacteria and parasites when Songbird rescues him. Instead of running, Day runs back into the community theater and attacks the Sunmaster, killing him and stealing the brazen head in an attempt to free Demerzel. So not a lot here, but, you know, it's funny. So, by the way, on feedback, I have been collecting it. I have it. I have your emails. We're going to do a feedback episode at the end of the season, I think. This makes more sense because we've been recording these asynchronously.
Sure.
But let's do it at the end of the season. I have yours. I see Jordan. I see Christina. I see plenty
salut,
of
Salut, Jordan.
There. Oh, yeah. Merci salut. Bien. Salut. Don't worry. I'll get out my Quebecois chest. I see Maurice.
Of course you will.
I see plenty of people here. So I think we have six or seven emails so far. Keep them coming in. We will get to any email that comes in, I will read at the end of the season. So, Great. We're all good. We're all good. Unless it's really mean, and then I won't read it. But don't send mean emails anyway.
No, there's no need for that.
All right.
There's no need for that.
In all seriousness.
The saprophytic caterpillar didn't really work for me.
Oh, I thought it was great.
Really monster one. It was kind of monster from the lagoon, sort of, whatever. But I didn't watch anything too closely because I could figure out what it was, but the overgrown flesh-eating caterpillars, not so much. Besides, Sunmaster had talked about tiny microbes and things, and that was no tiny microbe.
Maybe it was because I
caterpillar as big as his arm.
Yeah, maybe it was because I was recently thinking about the Neverending Story, but I was getting Atreyu vibes here when he's trying to murk through there. You know, I wanted to shout for Atreyu. All right, all right.
Well, all I can say is this was probably not the best episode or moment to be watching while I was eating. So
No.
I didn't really watch very closely at all. But I was confirmed in my belief that it would be Songbird who would rescue him from his fate worse than death.
You're right. Yeah. I mean, it could be that she knows that she's kind of screwed in this situation, too. So, but yeah. I do think that she sees a genuineness from him, right? And she says, all right, you know what? Sunmaster is clearly full of shit here, and we need to get Daniil freed. This is our best shot of getting Daniil freed,
because she experienced Daniil herself. There's nothing like seeing your savior figure to absolutely commit you firmly to the faith. And of course, we also know that even if, you know, Demerzel was standing in front of Sunmaster revealed in all her glory, he would still say, "Nah, it's a fake," because he doesn't want to let go of power.
Right. Yeah, and you know, I mean, I guess what Day is saying is we just need to get Daniil back to the Apple store to give you a factory reset. as long as we get her to the Genius Bar with this brazen head, we'll be all okay.
Well, but what I like what he actually says. You know, Song tells him, "You're doing a great thing for humanity." And Day says, "I'd settle for doing a great thing for her." What a turnaround.
Especially because early in the season, he is so distrustful of her. He is very dismissive of her.
He's cruel. He's vicious. He does everything he can to show her how much he loathes her. And all the more when she expresses any kind of tenderness and affection for him.
So what was it? Was it the drug trip that really sent him down? He remembered when she was kind to him as a kid?
I think so. I do. And also the realization of there is another robot, the experience that this robot is reaching out. I mean, what's left of it, right?
Right.
Except a really mangled head.
I mean, I bet you Demerzel
still reaching out.
Demerzel is going to get out her handy dandy fix it kit and rebuild that
robot. Why not? Why not? Why not? But again, you suddenly realize, oh, okay, she really does experience this yearning, this longing to communicate with another being of her kind. And all of her expressions of tenderness for the you know the young Cleons, the all the little Dawns. I find it much more believable now in terms of can a robot ever have these kinds of feelings? Well, call them feelings, call them coding, call them whatever you want, but it's there and it causes whatever you want to call anguish that robots experience.
Yeah.
And I think that's what caught Day's attention more than anything. And I'm glad that, you know, Ocean Glass comes down minus her red sash now, and she stands with Songbird and agrees. I think these two have talked amongst themselves for quite a while now about the need to get rid of Sunmaster. And the whole notion that, you know, whatever this is, he's really not in favor of it.
I wonder how much they have talked, because they did seem to trust him quite a lot when they, you know, we have to call Sunmaster. That did seem to be their safe haven when they called
him. Or was it there, if we don't call him, you know, he's going to hand us our butts?
Yeah, maybe. I don't know.
It could go either way, I think.
Yeah, I think you're right.
You know, up until the point where they had actual proof there was a real robot still surviving, I think they would have felt, yeah, we've got to follow Sunmaster. We've got to, you know, because he has the plan that will eventually get us freed from, you know, just the lowest confines of Trantor at this point. And we can go out searching for the remaining robot from there. But now they don't have to do that anymore. They know where the remaining robot is. And the fact that Sunmaster doesn't care, in fact, is terrified that they will bring her back or connect with her, I think kind of makes it clear what I think they've already suspected for quite a while.
Right.
That he's just not ever going to try to bring back what they're seeking.
Right.
And I got to say, Day really enjoys stabbing Sunmaster with his own staff.
He's like, yeah.
Finally,
got him.
I can take out all this frustration and anger.
I did try to make him get eaten alive, right?
Well, yeah, I mean, no, absolutely.
That's two different Cleons being made into a dinner metaphor that day.
Isn't it interesting? Isn't it interesting? And I think one of the reasons why he enjoyed it so much was because, in some degree, he was also trying to kill that within himself, which was being like Sunmaster and saying, well, you know, it's not real. She says she wants it. She really doesn't. It's it, you know, basically leveling her to the level of any kind of, you know, box-shaped computer system or whatever. But having experienced the Brazen Head and what it does, he understands what it's really doing. And again, Sunmaster completely misinterprets that. He, as the false prophet, he's saying, well, this is what it really means, when of course it's not what it means at all. It doesn't mean he's condemned to death. It means I'm trying to reach out because I've heard my song and I need to respond to it. And I love very, again, wonderful mic drop moment. The Sunmaster calls him profane man, and he calls Sunmaster dead man.
Yeah, that was pretty good. That was a good comeback.
It was good. It was good. I think everybody enjoyed this scene.
Yeah.
Except maybe Sunmaster.
Yeah, he didn't enjoy it too much. I am glad that we don't have to hear the voice that doesn't belong on that face, though, anymore. You know, the costuming wasn't there for this voice. I will say that. And I do think it was more of a costuming issue than a... Although Jordan, I'm saving your feedback for the end, but Jordan did comment on that. Said, John, you're cracking me up with your Sun Lord voice commentary, as I feel exactly the same. I remember the actor Blake Ritson from the short-lived show Krypton, where he plays a similar role. And then via Alicia, I saw him again on The Gilded Age, a great podcast on this great pod called The Lorehounds, by the way. And yes. He has that same discombobulating voice. He's an amazing theater actor, but man, the voice can throw you off a bit.
Yeah, it's really funny. It really is. I mean, put gray hair on him and give him a beard. But again, anybody with that much vanity would probably want to remove all traces of age if possible.
And Jordan and Gerard wrote in to tell you that it was probably Cincinnatus that you were thinking of.
Yes. Okay.
Or
yes,
a Roman Empire last week.
It was Cincinnatus. Thank you. Thank you both.
Thank you. All right, we'll get to the rest of the feedback later, but yeah, I mean, I don't have much more to say about the scene other than I really do hope Demerzel Danilo gets freed.
I do too, and I really think that if anybody can do it, it's going to be Day, which is Again, talk about a twist from the day that we saw in the first couple of episodes.
Brother Dude really has it going.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, maybe he's a little hard to reach, but, you know, a couple of drug-induced trips back to his childhood and, you know, listening to a really insane guy.
Gail enters the vault with her genetic key and meets with Vault Harry. She explains how his vault works as a four-dimensional object with a three-dimensional shadow and asks to use it to get close to the mule. The vault dweller, who refuses to be called Harry, asks for a body in return. Gail agrees, despite the only person with knowledge being gone.
So what do you mean by that? The only person with knowledge?
The only person with knowledge of how, because he's like, get me a body. She goes, I don't know how. And he goes, ask Harry. She goes, okay. And but she goes later, don't tell him Harry's dead. Right, so that he was the only person with knowledge of that body.
Oh, okay, I missed that illusion entirely.
That might not be true at all, because Kali is the one who really did it, right? This Kali projection.
Exactly.
So, exactly. But we don't have a Prime Radiant in the possession. Actually, no, the Second Foundation has the other Prime Radiant. What am I saying? So, mm-hmm. I guess they could theoretically interface with the Prime Radiant. I don't know how this works, though.
Well, and Vault Harry gave away his Prime Radiant to Demerzel.
Right,
so.
Right.
You know, maybe he's regretting that choice.
No. Maybe.
Yeah, I just found myself wondering, how is Gail supposed to give you a body? I mean, come on. What?
Right, right.
She's got other, A, she's got other fish to fry right now, and B, does she know how to do that? I don't think so.
Vault Harry goes, look, all I know is he went off with you, he came back with a body, make it happen. Right. That's it. And I kind of get it.
Yeah, it's interesting she starts off by saying that Salvor shouldn't have told Vault Harry about Hobar. You know, we're going back a couple, you know, to last season.
Oh, and, yeah.
You know, the way that he's, you know, interfering with this plan that nobody should interfere with, supposedly. And he says, well, you were in trouble. And she says, well, so was New Terminus. You know, you could have pulled him in here again. And then Harry says, like a good teacher, did I pull? Right. You think it out.
Right.
And so we get the whole demonstration with the spoon and turning it one way and turning it another, and the shadow changes. And
he scooped them.
Yeah. You project the vault into three dimensions, caught them in the spoon. It's like, okay. And then Harry responds, Calais helped. I was created an empty sleeve of a man. Perhaps if I'd been allowed to know more, I could have done more. So
he's so petty here.
Well, also, you know, I think the knowledge that he's the left hand has been eating away at him for some time now.
Well, you know, that and the fact that he was caught completely flat-footed with the mule.
Yes, the right. Two together does not make for a happy Harry. And I understand that.
He shows up. He's like, hey, guys, all right, we're going to get this civil war taken care of. Don't you worry about it. Harry Seldon here with the plan. They're like, all right, what about the mule? And he goes, Huh?
The what?
I'm going to go back now? To my man cave.
But he makes up for it very quickly, I have to say.
He does. He does. Like you said to me.
Last episode.
Yeah.
He caught up on the news. Right, read all the hollows.
Right. He got into Vault Feed.
Yeah. And again, it was confirmed that Harry says, I gave her a paradox bomb, the fault in her program expressed in pure psychohistory. So, my feeling all along was when he gave her the Prime Radiant, it was with some intention of sabotaging her or something along those lines.
But she couldn't resist it, right? This was the knowledge of how to get Empire on the right track. And she, you know, her programming also required her to take it.
But Vault Harry also wanted to let the other Harry know that he was still acting and not the creature of this other Harry. Which is kind of ironic, since to the best of our knowledge, that Harry is off the table, but now you never know. It was Kali taking him into, you know, whatever dimension. So
I still don't understand what happened there. And it was really interesting because the last episode, I didn't mention this, but the last episode was called Skin in the Game. And that's exactly what Kali had said to him, right? And then Gail says it again this episode. So in episode, I think it was 2, Harry disappears with Kale, who says, you know, it's time to see who the one who wanted you to have skin in the game.
Skin
in the game. Never saw him again. So I feel like
we never found out who that person was.
Yeah, I feel like we have to see this resolve in the finale. I thought it was going to resolve sooner. Apparently not. I guess they're saving it for a big finale.
I hope they're going to clarify that. I mean, it's a very long dangling thread at this point. So
yeah, I mean, if they save it for next season, I don't. That's not going to be great.
Very annoying. I'm a man who's fallen into the well, screaming to get out. And then he says, I'll help on one condition. And Kale says, that's the Harry I know.
Right.
Which really annoys him. He doesn't want to be called Harry.
Mm-hmm.
You know, don't call me that. He got a body in full knowledge. I want what he has. Well, I don't know. It's almost a bit like, okay, so you establish multiple iterations of the same Cleon. We've got two iterations of Harry. And How does that work? And what does that mean? And why did the flesh Harry who set this whole thing up figure that all this was a good?
Demerzel at the end of the season is just going to push a button in the decanter room and it's going to be a room of Harry's.
That's a very scary thought.
If that actually happens, I promise I did not watch ahead.
No.
Mark my words. If that happens, one, if that happens, I think it'll be stupid. And two, I don't even know. Is it like future Demerzel Daniil? Like, hey, we got to, oh my God, I'm getting too much in my head now.
We
got to get Harry to have skin in the game so that he can, in the past, help us do the thing, and then he'll die, and
time
then he
paradox. Won't,
and then, yeah. I got to ask you, Marilyn, if you were an immortal digital being, and you could have all the knowledge in the universe, basically. Because I think this Harry could, you know, any book that's ever been written, any media that's ever been out there, he could try any food because, you know, it's all the same thing. If you could be that Vault Harry, basically, or you could go and become a middle-aged Harry Seldon and live a normal lifespan, what would you choose?
Oh, I'd be the live a normal lifespan, because you get to go into with Kali into a whole new, you know, I already am a Vault Harry equivalent. I'm a librarian.
All right.
You know, I've had all this knowledge available to me. I don't have all knowledge available to me. I don't want all knowledge available.
I don't know. Sometimes
being selective is the important thing.
Sometimes I'm reading the Stormlight Archive and I'm like, I could use some more time to read this.
It's not about more time, John. It's about, you know, more knowledge.
True.
And I'm satisfied with the kinds of knowledge that I have.
All right. Very
plus,
good.
Plus, I kind of like having skin in the game. You know, I like that whole embodiment thing.
Well, Marilyn, I grant your wish as Kale.
Oh, thank you. Plus, I want to see the mystery that's on the other side of that doorway that she walked through with him.
It was actually just an incinerator. she was just giving him a merciful death.
Yeah. Baited him right I want to know is, if Demerzel's memories were part of the forming of the Prime Radiant in the first place, why is it now presenting her with a paradox? Why is there something that she can't solve about this?
Well, I guess it wasn't the only thing, right? It was used as a source material, but it was not the final product.
Well, what Harry says is, I gave her a paradox bomb. The fault in her program expressed in pure psychohistory. So is the fault in her program when the first Cleon overrode her zero with law, saying you will always preserve empire? And how did Harry know about that?
I don't know.
Or was the zero with law the fault in her program?
Yeah, it could be. Maybe the conflict between the two is the fault.
And the seeming impossible task of deciding what is good for humanity.
Right. Yeah, we don't tend to agree on that as humans very well, do we?
Well, and as Demerzel memorably said in a previous episode, you seem to have such a desire for self-destruction.
I mean, I literally just brought up a book that debated what we should classify the mindless killing of millions of people as. So, yeah, we do have a mind for destruction. Like, we are... we don't do the right thing a lot of the time,
and we have a mind for regeneration.
Yeah,
And maybe that's been really brought home to me today because I got to hold my grandson first since he was born.
Very cute.
A month ago. Yeah. So, you know, there's still, it still goes on. The cycle still goes on. The generation still goes on.
And, yeah.
Yeah. I'll go through the mystery. Thanks. I don't need to know everything.
All right. Well, I appreciate your take there.
Yeah. Yeah. So at this point, they go out of the vault and greet everybody who's waiting there, including Maggie. And then Harry tells Gale that the mule story doesn't add up just before the Dirty Dozen minus seven enters with Maggie into the vault. So I'm wondering how that's going to work out. What did you think of the device at the end with Gail's voice overlaid as we see all the different scenes of people? You know, she's been our narrator a number of times throughout all three seasons.
I think it's fine. I generally don't love narrations like this. I think that they are a little bit, I was going to use a mean word, but I'll use a less mean word. I just think that they're a little exposition dumpy, right? And a little cheesy sometimes.
Yeah, and it's too bad because they have had some magnificent dialogue.
Yeah, and they don't need this. They really don't need this. Just show me the people.
Well, I think they wanted to show the people, but it may just be they said, you know, we do need something over, you know, just all these multiple scenes.
Just put the music there. The music is good enough. Just let Bear McCreary do his thing.
Well, and just her final line, I will not walk alone on this path. Followed by seeing Dusk unable to eat his magnificent dinner because he's realized he's walking his path alone. And then Day walking his path alone back to the palace that I'll bet he never wanted to set foot in again before he left it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's good stuff there. I don't know. For whatever reason, the overlay voice didn't really quite cut it for me. So.
I think it's very necessary during the beginnings of these seasons because of the big time jumps.
Yes, I have no problem with that.
Yeah, I don't love it when it's like, and here's what's going to happen next. I'm like, just show me. Just tell me. Yeah. Just show, not tell. Yeah. Right?
Yeah. I don't mind having summaries of, you know, yeah, well, I've been asleep for 152 years. You know, just kind of bringing us up to date for, all right, where are we now? And what's, you know, what has happened and so on. And then, as you say, show me.
Right.
Moving forward.
Oh, don't worry. Let's make a show tell flux capacitor test because David loves to add six new tests every time I open up an outline. So this is the show tell diameter that, you know, I just make fun of them. You know, I'm just poking fun at them.
Yeah. Well, that's fine.
All right. We've been doing this long enough where I'm allowed to. So now I'm very excited for the finale. I might go watch it tonight after this, even though it's late.
I would love to. I think probably wisdom will prevent me from doing that, but there's always lunches.
That's true.
You mentioned that one of the folks who wrote in was talking about the Roman Empire thing, and listening to some history things recently, I realized that while I'm seeing this largely through the lenses of ancient European empires, I'm sure that the similar patterns show up in empires located in pre-European contact, India and China, the Middle East, and Sub-Saharan Africa.
Right.
So it's not exclusive to
these things. Do tend to repeat.
Yeah, and I think Asimov's depiction in the Total series, Asimov's depiction of empire was a kinder, gentler empire than what we're seeing here.
Mm.
And there was more of a focus on you know, the people who were degenerating in their behavior and you know, things were falling apart. And I don't know, are we supposed to interpret that to mean that all empires are a priori bad by virtue of being empires? I mean, we do start off in the first season being reminded of the, you know, respect and enjoy the peace. So, you know, I don't think that exists anymore particularly.
That's a good question. I don't think we are supposed to understand that because the whole goal is to create a new empire, right? Like, if it were better to leave everyone in their feudal states, then that's what Harry Seldon would want to do. But he thinks that the answer is a second empire.
So there has to be some difference between the Second Empire and the first one, I hope.
Yeah, I mean, clearly the difference is much clearer in the show, right? Which is there's a Cleonic dynasty, there's this robot, there is this this enforced stagnation, right? There is this enforced stuckness.
Right. That's the thing that the books kept bringing up over and over.
Right. And, right. And maybe he just didn't want to go into it with the books. And he just was like, yeah, it's just stagnation. And for some reason, this empire is going to be better at that. Maybe because it has science and psychohistory at its base. But I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. So I went vocabulary diving again. In the Sunmaster Saints, he mentions the Sacrarium, which is the saprophytic pit that's supposed to receive the elements. And I realized it sounded familiar. Well, I think it's intended to be a scrambled version of the Sacratorium, which is a particular kind of sink found in Catholic churches. Instead of draining into whatever sewer system is there, it drains into the earth itself. And so that is where any leftover consecrated wine or holy water, baptismal font water are poured. I'm not sure that they can use it for the wafers, but, you know, probably the same basic idea. And then also, he uses the word peccare, which reminds me of peccatore, you know, sinner.
Mm.
So it's interesting that they're throwing in these Latin words for this very highly ritualistic culture. So,
yeah, that is interesting.
That was one of my reflections.
I mean, the Catholics, David, they love their rituals. So I can't,
I'm hoping I'm not... David Goyer is listening to this so he knows how I'm picking out these little details.
Yeah, yeah, no. I mean, you know what? We had our markers last season, but I think we've been pretty good about following rabbit holes this season.
We'll see. We'll see. Another thing I finally understood, remember we were both confused as to, you know, when Demerzel and Varelis were in the garden for the last time, and we think that she's going to kill her. When she's talking about, for the second time, I'm going to have to do something horrible to, you know, a current priestess. I thought initially meant killing her, but of course, I think what she's referring to is the knowledge that she's going to destroy the luminous sacred planets.
Yeah. No, yeah, absolutely. Now, I think that's definitely confirmed. I mean, leaving her alone as the last luminous is perhaps worse.
Which I don't think is true.
Well, yeah, I mean, but because but the that religion was her exists home, right? all over the planet. That was
it was her home, but it was also it's like, you know, bombing any of the sacred religious sites.
Right. If you bomb the Vatican, there would still be Catholics, right? I get what you're saying.
Exactly.
I get what
exactly. you're saying. Exactly. Exactly. But still, the horror of it, because it was so clearly the sacred place, you know, you think of, and they actually showed us that scene of all the pilgrims doing the intensely harsh and difficult pilgrimage on that planet. You don't do it just anywhere. You do it on that planet.
Right.
And all of that is gone now. Also, I think this is why Demerzel says, I know now that the mother will never hold me in her arms.
Yeah.
Because how could she possibly do that after what Demerzel knows she's about to sanction, to approve?
Absolutely.
Oh, it also occurred to me that the Demerzel's lack of knowledge about the Novacula could be meant to demonstrate her increasing existential crisis interfering.
Yeah.
Along with her despairing over her Cleons, and it's distracting her from other things.
I think I think you're right. A season one Demerzel would not have missed it.
I don't think so. There was a lot of discussion about this on the Discord channels. So
isn't that interesting how we've been focused on this Cleonic drift? And all the while, there's been a Demerzel drift.
Demerzel
since season
drift.
Two.
Yeah, yeah, I think that's true. That's absolutely right. And now I'm even wondering if Vault Harry is planning to use the mule to aid him in his search for his own skin in the game. That would be an interesting twist.
That is interesting. And I mean, what other purpose is Harry looking for the mule for, right?
Really, so many people, again, asking, why didn't he just slap him down and kill him when he could? So, there, you know, you think there must be a reason. Now, whether or not it's a good reason or a bad reason or a crazy reason, we have yet to determine.
Right.
And it seems to me that, as we said before, there's still plenty of luminists in the galaxy. I'm sure there must be some cloud dwellers who are off planets at the time. might want to unite with Emule and help take down Tranter and Empire. So yeah, it'll be interesting. And then I have one teeny tiny book spoiler.
Okay.
I don't know if you have any I think this is fine.
Stuff, but yeah, I think
this one is okay.
Yeah. I mean, I would just say if you really don't want a spoiler for the books, it's just a minor spoiler for a book identity, but I don't think this is a huge spoiler. I would consider it, and I haven't read it yet.
Yeah. Well, for those of you who know the books, I'm thinking now that Demerzel is intended to be a combination of Daniil and Dors, D-O-R-S, who appears in the two prequel volumes. So for whatever that's worth, you know, people are saying, well, why did they change your gender? And I'm just wondering, maybe this could.
Well, they changed everybody's gender in the show, so I don't really care about
that. Well, fair point.
I mean, it's something that I appreciated that David Goyer made clear in his interview with us is that he just picked the person he thought would play the role the best, regardless of gender, regardless of race, regardless of identity, whoever would play the role the best.
Yeah, and golly, I have a very hard time conceiving of anybody doing a better job than Laura Byrne is doing.
Oh yeah, I think she does a fantastic job.
It's stunning.
Although it must be very painful to hold your arms like that all day in shooting.
I gotta tell you, I hope she has an off-camera massage therapist who comes rushing on at every candle.
What if they have like cut? What if there's in her sleeves? There's like a rod that holds them together up so that she doesn't have to do it all day. That would be genius, honestly.
Well, and again, between takes, I'm sure she has to have a coach telling her, "Relax your shoulders. Relax your shoulders." Because it would be so easy to get that whole body system just completely knotted up.
Absolutely. And she's not a real robot. So, yeah.
No, not really.
Well, everyone, this was a fantastic discussion. And we went a little longer this time. I knew we would because there was a lot to talk about.
Definitely.
If you want to get in your feedback again, I have your emails if you've sent them in already. Just if you want to continue to send in feedback for a season wrap up. We'll do our whole season wrap up. I think we'll talk some more book spoilers on that too. But for now, I just want to give our outro here. Oh, sorry. Email empire@thelorehounds.com. That is the email for it.
Yes.
But let's just give our shout outs to our affiliates. Nevermind the Music is wrapping up their second season and going into their third. I was just listening to their mailbag episode, third mailbag of the season. Great stuff. I'm really enjoying it. It's nice to hear that there's going to be sort of a two-part wrap-up, so check out their season. You're just in time to jump into season two, and I think you're going to like it. A musician and a psychologist are all about the music.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Also, Radioactive Ramblings. Aaron right now is focusing on covering Peacemaker with Alicia over on the main feed. So don't forget to check out Peacemaker if you are okay with a +5 to +10 on the Pokula scale.
Which will be an indication to everybody that I'm not watching that one.
And Jean's on that podcast too. I was just mentioning Aaron because it's Radioactive Ramblings. But yeah, Jean, Aaron, and Alicia are all covering Peacemaker. So definitely check out the main feed. If you're on the Foundation feed, you are on the right feed to get the Peacemaker coverage.
I'm sure it must be spectacular with those three.
I know. I'm not caught up. I can't listen to it yet, but I'm gonna catch up one day. One day. All right. Also, if you want more Marilyn Rings of Rituals, go listen to, no new episodes right now, but you can always catch up on that Rings of Power content.
Yes. Get a reminder, season one, in anticipation of our coverage of season two, which will be a good setup for the beginning of season three.
That's right. And Properly Howard is finishing up their bacon wrap season. They're having a great time on that. And
it's a good thing, too, because consuming all that bacon,
I know.
They got a layoff.
Not great. You ever hear of Epic Mealtime, Marilyn?
No.
Okay. So when I was when I was in high school, my senior year in high school, there was a YouTube channel called Epic Mealtime. And may I say, as a 17, 18-year-old, I thought this was the most hilarious thing I'd ever seen. They would buy like 50 McDonald's cheeseburgers and like turn it into a casserole. And then they would wrap it in a bacon wrap. And they would just, all like animalistically eat this food. And in like the most comical way.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I thought it was hilarious. I thought it was hilarious when I was 17. Now I would cringe quite a lot at it. But man, was that great content for a 17-year-old boy?
Well, yeah, I think that was probably their target audience, right. Don't you? I can feel my arteries hardening as you describe them.
I feel like I should send you just one. Just one. I wonder if they're even still up. I haven't checked in years, you know.
Well, you do whatever
I'm going to find one. I'm going to find one for you, Marilyn. Anybody, I hope this spurs a Discord conversation for millennials like me who were sucked into the epic mealtime nonsense for a minute. Okay. All right. Bacon wrapped. Listen to Properly Howard. We got back there. Kevin Bacon themed season. Two old friends reviewing movies together. And don't forget to check out Alicia's podcast, Woolshift Dust, covering Dune, and the Star Wars Canon Timeline podcast covering what the title says, Star Wars.
To great detail and great expertise.
Yeah, absolutely. You've been on some on that
feed. I have on a couple when we got into things about myth and fairy tale, which I did know something about.
Very nice. All right. On the main feed, as I mentioned, Peacemaker, full coverage with Alicia, Jean, and Aaron. We also have David at the helm of Alien Earth. I hear the season's going great. He's had a bunch of different guests on, including Alicia, including Luke, and also including Duve and Brian 8063. So
wonderful.
Yeah, I think it's great. We're getting more community members on the mic, and that's a lot of fun.
Absolutely.
That's a lot of fun. So good job, guys. I haven't listened to your pod yet, but I heard it was a hit. And other than that, we're finishing up Foundation. I'm not sure what we're doing after that because Peacemaker is going to still be going for a long time. So sure. just keep up on the main feed. And once Foundation wraps up, we're going to return to some Silmarillion stories. And Marilyn, you're on my next one.
Excellent.
Don't worry. You're going to have more Marilyn and John after Foundation.
Thanks for the heads up.
You're welcome. We'll talk scheduling off air. Okay. All right, so Discord server boosters, I want to thank Aaron K, Tilla the Thriller, Dew71, Athena A, Listu, Nancy M, Ghost of Partition, Radioactive Richard, and Adrian. And our lore masters, Samartian, Michael G, Michelle E, Brian P, SC, Peter OH, Adam S, Nancy M, Dew71, Brian 8063, Frederick H, Sarah L, Garrett C, Matthew M, Sarah M, Andra B, Kwang Yu, Deadeye Jedi Bob, Nathan T, Alex V, Sub Zero, Aaron K, Dally V, Mothership 61, Gnarls. Kathy W., Listu, Jeffrey B., Elisa U., Neil F., Ben B., Scott F., Stephen N., Julia F., Kali S., Ilmariel, /Tim, Paul K., Bobby C., Jessica H., Red Zippy, the TCS, a new War Master. Thank you for subscribing.
Yay.
And Adrian, thanks everyone for all your support. We will be back next week with the finale of Foundation Season 3.
It's going to be great, I hope.
We'll see you then, whether it's good or not.
We will be here to talk all about it.
Good night.
The Lorehounds podcast is produced and published by The Lorehounds. You can send questions and feedback and voicemails at thelorehounds.com/contact. Get early and ad-free access to all Lorehounds podcasts at patreon.com/thelorehounds. Any opinions stated are ours personally and do not reflect the opinion of or belong to any employers or other entities. Thanks for listening.